Britain's second canticle, Abraham and Isaac. It was sung by Ruby Hughes and James Gilchrist, with Imogen Cooper playing the piano. And they finished their concert with one of Britain's many folk song arrangements. This one's from Somerset, Master Kilby. Master Kilby, arranged by Benjamin Britten and sung by Ruby Hughes and James Gilchrist, accompanied by the guitarist Christoph Denot. This is Radio 3. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Alan Shipton with Jazz Record Requests. But now from Cadogan Hall here in London, here's Clemency Burton Hill.
Welcome to Cadogan Hall for the second of this season's Proms Saturday matinees. This year we're celebrating, of course, the centenary of Benjamin Britten. And for the rest of the prom season, these weekend chamber proms will be a space in which we get to explore in context the music of Britten and his contemporaries. For today's concert, we are delighted to welcome back to the proms a brilliant ensemble inspired by the very ethos of the composer himself. Later, mezzo-soprano Sarah Connolly joins Britten Sinfonia in two great British works for voice and string orchestra. Lennox Barclay's Four Poems of Saint Teresa of Avila and Benjamin Britten's staggering final vocal work, Phaedra, based on Racine's tragic figure. But we begin with a much earlier offering, his formerly radical work for 18-part string orchestra, The Prelude and Fugue. Composed when Britten was 30, it's one of the first things that he completed after moving back to the UK from America. And it is, as the title indicates, an unambiguous homage to Bach, one that gives an antiquated form a thrillingly modern treatment. Well, to join Britten Sinfonia on stage here at Cadogan Hall to perform The Prelude and Fugue by Benjamin Britten, here's conductor Sean Edwards.
Thank you. Thank you.
Benjamin Britten's Prelude and Fugue, performed by Britten Sinfonia and conductor Sian Edwards here at Cadogan Hall. The leader of the Britten Sinfonia and violin soloist there was Jacqueline Shave. In a moment, we're going to hear music from Britten's very dear friend Lennox Barclay when mezzo-soprano Sarah Connolly gives a rare performance of the supremely elegant and intensely felt Four Poems of St. Teresa of Avila. But first, to Holst. We know that Britten's relationship to Imogen was hugely important. She lived in Aldborough, she was an artistic director of the festival, and also worked as Britten's copyist, assistant, and editor. But the influence of her father on Britten was also significant. He once said of Gustav Holst, "I owe him more than I can tell you." From 1905 until his death in 1934, Holst was music director at St. Paul's Girls' School in Hammersmith and was supposedly so grateful for the school's decision to build him a soundproof studio that he composed a work that went on to become one of his most widely admired, the St. Paul's Suite. Before we hear it, I believe the Britten Sinfonia are going to have a very quick tune behind me here on stage at Cadogan Hall. So to join on stage the Britten Sinfonia to perform Holst's St. Paul's Suite, please welcome back conductor Sian Edwards. Thank you. Gustav Holst's St. Paul's Suite, performed by Britten Sinfonia and conducted by Sian Edwards. Well, next at the proms this afternoon, music from the composer who in many senses was closest to Britten, Lennox Barclay, whose musical economy of style, refined under Nadia Boulanger in Paris, was an absolute creed for Britten. The work we're going to hear is one that many consider to be among Barclay's finest, including Britten himself, who conducted and greatly admired the four poems of St. Teresa of Avila. Composed in 1947 and premiered the following year by Kathleen Ferrier, who was such an inspiration to Barclay, the songs set texts by the 16th century Spanish Carmelite nun, St. Teresa. With their muted fervour and intensity, their spare form and melodic inventiveness, they encompass every aspect of the composer's musical character. I was talking to Lennox's son Michael earlier, and he made the point that in these most profound expressions of his father's Roman Catholicism, Lennox almost had more license to compose passion than in his love music. Well, now we welcome back to the proms one of Britain's greatest mezzo-sopranos, Sarah Connolly. She joins the Britten Sinfonia and conductor Sian Edwards to perform Lennox Barclay's Four Poems of St. Teresa of Avila. The Four Poems of St. Teresa of Avila by Lennox Barclay, performed at this prom Saturday matinee by Sarah Connolly and Britain Sinfonia with conductor Sean Edwards, who very kindly is coming back to the stage here to have a quick chat with me while this rather complicated stage move ahead of the tippet is about to go on behind us. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we're hearing a lot of string music this afternoon, string orchestral music. Why was this such a favoured medium of composers at the time?
Well, I think all these British composers were very interested in finding an authentic voice. In other words, if you think about Holst writing at the turn of the century and Tippett, of course, growing up in the 1920s, just after the First World War, very aware of what was happening in Europe and Britain just after him in the 30s, I think they were well aware that there was an enormous amount going on in terms of experimental work in the German-speaking countries particularly, and Schoenberg, of course, is the big figure. And yet, for people in Britain, I think the idea of just adopting 12-tone style or trying to write in the style of perhaps Brahms, Mahler, Schoenberg wasn't quite the voice that they were looking for. So I think they went back, actually, all of these composers to much earlier forms. They were all very, very interested in the fantastic golden age of British music, when we had people like Tallis and Gibbons writing, and then, of course, Purcell, the big big name of all. And they all studied this music very thoroughly. And I think it comes actually perhaps from a sense of that kind of chamber music, that they all wanted to grow out of something that was actually our own, very own heritage. I think for 200 years in Britain, we'd had some wonderful composers actually, but perhaps, you know, not on the scale of the Beethovens and Brahmses. And I think they were trying in the early 20th century to really find their own voice, and going back to those early forms meant they went back to smaller ensembles, and the idea of writing for strings, I think, came very much from that.
Britten is such a dazzling figure in this firmament. How important is it to set his music in the context of his contemporaries?
I think that's a very interesting question, because quite often I find when I'm trying to make concert programmes, it's actually quite difficult to put Britten with other English or British composers. One feels almost that he does outshine them. But I think in this context, where we've got four wonderful composers in this concert, and you can actually really feel where their roots are and all where they're coming from, I think it's very exciting to put them together. And of course, although it's common knowledge that Tippett is a lot harder to play than Britten in some respects, although actually, I mind you, I wouldn't say that that last fugue of Britten was easy at all. I think the Britten Sinfonia make it sound easy, but it's fantastically difficult.
Certainly do.
But of course, in the Tippett coming, we've also got a fugue, which is hard. But the string writing generally is much harder, so it is generally harder to make Tippett work. Britten's incredibly skilled at writing for whatever ensemble he writes for, to make it actually work and sound, whereas in Tippett we have to work much harder. So I think that's why we perhaps don't always program his music, for example, with Britten.
Britten and Tippett at one point were contemporaries, they were colleagues. Can you characterise the differences or the similarities in their music? What should we be listening out for?
Well, I think in this piece of Tippett, the Fantasia, it's got this wonderful sense of the pastoral, which is a very English form, actually. Again, something that Purcell wrote. And so you have a very, in this Tippett fugue, a very terse fugue. He's showing off, actually, because he uses not only a subject by Bach and Corelli, but then two of his own as well. So you get this sort of double fugue, which is repeated once the right way up, and then a second time upside down as well, just to show that he could really write fugues. But after that, it melts into the most gorgeous, sensual, and incredibly heartfelt and forgiving music, actually. And I think that that's a part that all the composers have. We've just heard the Barclay third movement, for example, Like a Prayer. And I think all these British composers have got some of that quality.
Well, thank you so much, Sean Edwards. I think the orchestra are assembled on stage and ready for a quick tune. Thank you so much. So to conduct Britten Sinfonia, please welcome back Sean Edwards for this performance of Michael Tippett's Fantasia Concertante on a theme of Corelli.
Thank you.
Michael Tippett's Fantasia Concertante on a theme of Corelli, performed by Britten Sinfonia and conductor Sean Edwards, Jacqueline Shave and Magnus Johnston with the violin soloists, Caroline Dinley, the cellist. Well, for our closing piece this afternoon, we turn again to the music of Benjamin Britten and his searing final work of cantata, a masterpiece of a cantata based on Racine's Phèdre, a setting of a 1962 translation by the American poet Robert Lowell. Now, we're going to hear again from the magnificent mezzo-soprano Sarah Connolly, recently named Singer of the Year at the Royal Philharmonic Society Awards, among many, many other accolades. And she's here with me on stage at Cadogan Hall to have a quick chat before she sings. You've changed into this resplendent dress, which looks vaguely familiar, because you're currently performing Phèdre, no less, yes, in Glyndebourne, in Rameau's Hippolyte et Aïssi. Yes. And here you are at Cadogan Hall singing Phèdre,
well,
Britten's version.
Very grateful to Glyndebourne for lending me the Phèdre frock.
For those listening at home, it's a resplendent red confection. Which
thank you. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention the designer.
Probably not. Okay. We'll move swiftly on. It is remarkable that you are singing this character. I think we've literally caught you between two performances,
yes,
is that right?
Another one tomorrow.
Dare I ask if she's a character to whom you're inexorably drawn?
I've become drawn to her because I think the music that Britten writes and that Rameau inspires extraordinary energy and strength from me and from those who sing this music. There's not an awful lot of music by Britten for mezzo, and this is a fantastic piece, which I'm very grateful to be singing here, but at the Proms, but also wherever I do it, it's a real treat. But it's especially interesting that I'm doing it in the middle of the Rameau, because I feel she's with me all the time, so I don't have to think about who she is. She's just there.
There's an astonishing and rather merciless clash of light and dark in this cantata. Lines like "Death to the unhappy is no catastrophe" really sort of jump out and clutch the heart. What else should we be listening out for?
Well, it's very interesting because I was thinking a few minutes ago, what other music was Britten inspired by? And I can't help thinking Der Abend in Das Lied von der Erde with the final bottom C from the double basses, which to me in that piece represents life force. And when it dies away, it's a natural thing. And I think it's interestingly, he ends this piece with the same, exactly the same sound, just the double bass on a bottom C. Why did he do that? I know Britten was a great Mahler fan. And also I feel there's a sort of pulsing, a heartbeat throughout this piece, which also is Mahlerian, late Mahler. There's this sort of faltering, spasmodic sort of heartbeat, this pulse that sometimes, you know, you can actually hear quicken with the harpsichord and the continuo section, if you like, which is...
It's a very unusual ensemble that he writes for, not just the string section, but as you mentioned, the harpsichord and the cello continuo, as well as percussion, which is being assembled behind us
and
here.
And he was inspired by Rameau's Hippolyte et Aïssi for this, I'm sure.
To what extent do those orchestral textures create a tonality that suits this work, that perhaps serves the heartbeat and the stuttering, faltering mood that you mentioned?
There's a sort of jagged... what's the word I was thinking earlier? Twisted string section, and they use a lot of tritones. Britten uses a lot of tritones to describe torture, torment, and when the melodies do come, they're sort of, and her spirit is sort of dragged into these beautiful dominant sevenths and these ninths. It's quite sensuous music because she's a very sensual person. She's just been afflicted with this awful curse that she has no control.
It was Britten's last vocal work. He wrote it in 1974.
He was very ill, and that's another reason why I think he wrote about it's a sort of muse on mortality, if you like. I think he's feeling that this is his last great work, or one of his last great works, and I feel that he put everything into this, and so I do feel that it's a sort of dance of mortality.
Sarah Connolly, we're very much looking forward to hearing you sing it in just a moment after the Britten Sinfonia have a little tune. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So to perform this performance of Britten's Phaedra, please welcome back to the stage Sean Edwards and mezzo-soprano Sarah Connolly.
Thank you. Defame me and accuse. Performance of Benjamin Britten's Phaedra. The Britten Sinfonia was conducted by Sean Edwards, with leader Jacqueline Shave. And the continuo soloists were Caroline Dearnley on the cello and Maggie Cole on the harpsichord. Well, that brings today's Saturday matinee to a close. I'll be back at Cadogan Hall at the same time next weekend with a concert from Camerata Ireland and the trumpeter Alison Balsam, featuring more music from Benjamin Britten and his circle. Meanwhile, we're back live on Radio 3, the home of the Proms, tonight, when Vadim Repin takes on James McMillan's violin concerto and Donald Runnicles and the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra perform music from Beethoven to Johann Strauss II. For now, though, it's back to Broadcasting House.
That was Clemency Burton Hill at Cadogan Hall. And as she said, our next prom is at 7:30 this evening. And the concert we've just heard will be repeated on Wednesday at 2 o'clock. Well, we heard some music by Lennox Barclay earlier in the concert, four poems of St. Teresa of Avila. And let's hear some piano music by him now. The Six Preludes, Opus 23. He was commissioned by the BBC to write some piano pieces to be used as interludes between programmes. And this set became associated with the pianist Colin Horsley, who recorded them in 1949. Each prelude is created around a particular melodic and rhythmic idea. Here's Margaret Fingerhut to play Lennox Barclay's Six Preludes.
Thank you.
Lennox Barclay's six preludes, Opus 23, were played by Margaret Fingerhut. In 1949, Lennox Barclay was asked by UNESCO to write a piece to commemorate the centenary of the death of Chopin. He'd already composed a scherzo in homage to Chopin, and then he added two others to make up his Opus 32 No. 1. Here once again is Margaret Fingerhut.
Thank you.
Three Mazurkas, Opus 32, No. 1, written by Lennox Barclay as a tribute to Chopin. They were played by Margaret Fingerhut. Well, next we'll hear her playing a concert study composed in 1955 for the pianist Colin Horsley. Margaret Fingerhut played Lennox Barclay's Concert Study, Opus 48, No. 2. Now, music from 20 years earlier, three pieces, Opus 2, an etude, a berceuse, and capriccio. Thank you. Lennox Barclay's Three Pieces, Opus 2, played by Margaret Fingerhut. At 6 o'clock, that's in an hour's time, in Saturday Classics, the pianist Noriko Ogawa explores a wealth of musical connections to Japan, including works by Ravel, Shostakovich and Prokofiev. But now it's time for jazz record requests here on Radio 3. And in the chair, as usual, here's Alan Shipton.
Good afternoon. Music today from saxophonists Coleman Hawkins and Art Pepper, trumpeters Humphrey Littleton and Nat Canella, and big bands from America and South Africa. And we start with one of the best known of all jazz big bands. Michael Brown of Saul Bridgeworth says that Marigold's Jazz Club in Old Harlow, Essex, has recently celebrated its 10th anniversary, presenting the best of British jazz. Michael says, please play Count Basie's Jump for Johnny for Greg, his merry men, and all the regular ravers who attend this labour of love at its beautifully intimate venue. Jump for Johnny, written by Neil Hefti for television presenter Johnny Carson, and played there by the Count Basie Orchestra in 1962. The exchanges were between Frank Foster, tenor, and Sonny Cohn, trumpet, and the flautists were Frank Wess and Eric Dixon. The rest of the personnel, Thad Jones, Fip Rickard, Al Ahrens and Ernie Royal, trumpets, Grover Mitchell, Henry Coker and Benny Powell, trombones, with Marshall Royal, Frank Foster and Charlie Foulkes in the reeds, Count Basie piano, Freddie Green guitar, Buddy Catlett bass and Sonny Payne drums. The album that track comes from, On My Way and Shoutin' Again, with Basie squeezed into an E-type Jaguar on the cover, has just been reissued in the last few weeks by two different companies, American Jazz Classics and Fresh Sound. Christine Evans from Merthyr Tydfil says it's her husband Terry's birthday today. He'd like to hear any Art Pepper recording. So here, from the artistry of Pepper on Pacific Jazz, is Art's version of Shorty Rogers' tune, Popo.
Thank you.
Art Pepper's version of Shorty Rogers' 12-bar blues, Popo, recorded 56 years ago this month. The band, Art on alto sax with Bill Holman tenor and Bud Shank baritone, Don Fagerquist trumpet, Stu Williamson valve trombone, Red Callender the only man not to take a solo on tuba, Russ Freeman piano, Monty Budwig bass and Shelley Mann drums. Well, now two memories of Humphrey Lyttelton. First, G. Clark from Clacton went to the Cartoon Museum in London recently to see their exhibition of drawings by Wally Fawkes, or Trog as he's known in the cartoon world. And that reminded him of a record from the 50s of Apex Blues, on which both Wally and Humphrey play clarinets. The alto saxophonist is Bruce Turner.